Ecuador beat Qatar 2-0 this morning in the World Cup opener. And the host nation, pretty disappointing by all reports in that game this morning. Opening ceremony, Morgan Freeman playing a role in it, the great actor. And we're going to speak to Scott McDonald shortly. And yesterday he saw in the Sydney Super Cup, Everton beat Celtic 4-2 in a penalty shootout after the match finished scoreless. More than 41,000 there at Accor Stadium. There's a game still to go between Everton and the Western Sydney Wanderers. I believe that game's tomorrow. Well, Celtic, they lost both games then here after they lost to Sydney FC the other night as well. But the Socceroos in France, Wednesday morning, 6 a.m. Bring it on. Tab has the Socceroos $1.30. The French are $1.30. The Socceroos are $10. And the draw paying $5.50 for our opener on Wednesday morning. Just some other results around this morning. Novak Djokovic beat Casper Ruud in the ATP Tour Finals in Turin, 7-5, 6-3. Formula One and the season-ending Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. Max Verstappen won for Red Bull. He beat Charles Leclerc and Sergio Perez. And Daniel Ricciardo in what may be his last F1 race, certainly for McLaren, finished 9th this morning to pick up a couple of championship points to end his time there. Sebastian Vettel is finished. And he finished 10th, so he's retired. And just on the text line here, boys, my hero is Sebastian Vettel, such a humble world champion, unlike many others. Well, like you, Stu, we mentioned earlier, I just can't help but think of the Mark Webber days.
Multi-17 or multi-21 or whatever it was. Remember that? So he was in the latter years of his career. I'll give him that. He was very much in the latter years, a very humble former champion. It wasn't so much when he was a 22, 23-year-old kid winning. You know, success does different things to different people.
Villain is the Qatar supporters walking out of the game early against Ecuador. As a long-term South supporter, we always stayed to support our team, says Joe the Botany Butler. Okay, so maybe the Qatari fans left early this morning.
Blew up and left, you reckon? Didn't see it. When they were going out to dinner with Mossy. That's $45...
Feast. Including a beer or two, wasn't it?
He's couple. He's left off a zero, Mossy, for sure.
Other results around this morning and in the NFL, stacks of games going on at the moment. In fact, we're getting towards the end of those early games, but Buffalo looks like they're going to win after they suffered that unbelievable loss to Minnesota last week in dramatic circumstances. They're 31-16 up against the Cleveland Browns. The Ravens lead the Panthers 13-3. In games completed, Atlanta beat Chicago 27-24. The Patriots beat the Jets 10-3. The Detroit Lions went to New York and beat the Giants 31-18. The Eagles, a late touchdown, saw them beat the Indianapolis Colts 17-16. The New Orleans Saints beat the Rams 27-20 and Washington beat Houston 23-10 in some of your NFL this morning. But we're playing heroes and villains. Give us a call, 13-53-53. Send us a text, 0419-767-272. And just on the cricket morning, Stu, I was watching M. Stark Bowl Saturday night thinking, what was the so-called super coach of McDonald thinking throughout the T20 World Cup? Well, Mitchell Stark, he was asked. In fact, he was revealed he voiced, quote, strong opinions to George Bailey over being left out of the final 2020 group game against Afghanistan at the World Cup. And so he clearly wasn't happy about it.
Rightly so, too. I don't think anyone could work out why that happened or how that happened and what was the purpose behind it. There was a lot of talk about Pat Cummins being left out of that team at different times. I know Mark Waugh had a very strong opinion on that throughout the campaign. How they ended up with Mitchell Stark, and Mitchell's probably played enough cricket now to voice that opinion. I'm not a big fan of the selector being in the change rooms. I find that really awkward with the selector sitting there the whole time. He's almost like the coaching staff. So if you're having a down day or you're not going so well, he's there and, you know, do you feel comfortable talking to the coach with him around? I don't know. I don't like it. I always thought the other thing too is the selector should be around looking at who should be in that team. Because when you're playing for Australia, it's always on TV. You can turn on any stage, there it is. But, you know, how do you know what's going on in all the other formats of the game when you have to pick your team? And I know he's got an advisor in Tony Dottomade, but, I don't know if that system's quite right.
Also on the text line here, Villain, the very confident punter who tipped Alaskan God in the railway. Has it finished yet? Hero has to be Samoa. Basically played three grand finals in a row with limited depth in the end. Special mention to Tedesco. Hands down the best player in the world. Winners win. Canberra sending that one in. But yeah, he was superb, wasn't he? James Tedesco. And Mal Meninga, Loz, he lashed the Nathan Cleary critics as well. Post-match, post-Australia's 30-10 win in the World Cup final against Samoa on the weekend, and he's predicted, Mal, a new era of dominance for Australia, saying, this is only the beginning of this team, I can assure you, was Mal's direct quote.
Yeah, I think it's a really strong team, and a lot of these players will only get better the more they play with each other. Unfortunately, they haven't played with each other for, number of years, two or three years, because there's been no international football. So it was always going to take time, and they were building for their best performance. Nathan Cleary, look, he's been the dominant halfback in the NRL. Obviously, we didn't see a lot of that in the World Cup, but I thought his performance in the final was very good. Love to know why he didn't kick as well in the World Cup. There must have been something with the balls. But you look at what Steve Crichton was able to do. He slotted them all over the shop.
That was interesting.
He just struggled goal kicking. And Nathan Cleary is one of the real sharp shooters of the competition.
Different ball?
Yeah, it is. It's a lighter ball, and I think it's a fatter ball.
Right.
That's what I'm led to believe.
Surely he did his preparation. He might have just he might have just lost some confidence, and from there it didn't,
possibly did. Yeah.
Didn't quite work.
But the other one, when he was kicking from the sidelines at times, he was not getting the distance. So I'd love to know why he struggled with that ball. But you know, he's 25 years of age, hadn't played with Munster before, coming into the best form of his career. He'll be there for a long period of time, I would suspect.
Morning, Phil.
Yeah, morning from Halifax. How you going?
Oh, the great Halifax. Did you go to Thrum Hall?
I've been to Thrum Hall. I've been to Thornhill. I've been to Brighouse. They were one of the original signers in 1895.
Oh, now, when are you back home?
Oh, not until the 7th of December.
Oh, what's been the highlight of the trip?
Mate, meeting the big man.
Oh, that's right. Him and Blocker and Ciro were on the trip together, weren't they?
Yeah, I didn't see Blocker and Ciro, but I saw Daryl at Huddersfield when we played Lebanon, and then he was in the same area that we were in last night.
Was he holding court?
He was very well.
How many schooners did he have?
Oh, none. About 100 points, though. Nah, to be fair to the bloke, he wasn't going too hard.
Oh, that's good. I'll tell you what, it looked like a great atmosphere, the final.
Oh, mate, where we were, it was unbelievable. I mean, I got let down, these are my villains, by the people. You know, like I told you, I paid for 14 of us to be in that special area, and I ended up watching the first half sat by myself because they couldn't put us in the right seats.
Really?
I'm not happy. So I've written to them. I waited till I got sobered up, and then I wrote off to them and said, like, you know, this is what happened, and then that was that. Now I've got that's my villain. Now my hero. I was gonna go with Daryl because he gave his time unconditionally to you know, anybody that wanted a moment with him. But Danny Badiris, on short notice, filled in for Gordon Tallis on Thursday night at a function to raise money for MMD. And the guys said they rang him in the morning because Gordon had to pull out for, I don't know, I'm not sure what reason it happened, but he just rang him, and he went from York, came into Huddersfield, and he put three replica jerseys that he signed, and they raised £1,800 just off that for MND. They made over $4,000 or £4,000 on the night. So I thought that was pretty good, the way he just sort of fronted up and helped out. And
yeah, it doesn't surprise me. Danny Badiris, a wonderful bloke, a magnificent player. One of the greatest we've seen in terms of number nines in the game. But no, he's a quality bloke, Bedsy, and that doesn't surprise me at all, Phil, that he filled in at the last moment.
Yeah, no, I was pretty happy with myself because I was able to drive up the prices of several items in the auction and without getting caught.
Brilliant.
It's always good.
Yeah, so it's fun to look at their faces. And one guy even come up to me and he said, I just paid £40 more than what I was thinking. I thought that was a pretty good job.
So what do you got left to do over there then, Phil?
All right, so I go and catch up with a couple of people I haven't seen since way back when, stay with them for the next few days.
Yep.
And then down to Northampton for a week to catch up with a fellow there that I haven't seen for 10 years or so. And then it's back home. So it's only a little bit left, but still, but I'll tell you what, all this beer drinking, I reckon if I haven't put on 10 kilos in
two... Well, you haven't had a go, mate, if you haven't put on 10.
Yeah, I know. You'll see me hobbling around because I thought I could dance last night, but apparently I could shuffle, and then I'm paying for it today. The knee's just blown up like there's no tomorrow. You just forget about these things, don't you?
Yeah, you do, mate.
I was that out of it. The young guys were gone from the pub that we went to after the game, and they just said to me, mate, please take him home. He's had enough.
Well, Phil, we appreciate you checking in, mate, and I'm sure you. Well, it does sound like you've had a ball, so appreciate it, mate. And you're in the mix for Heroes and Villains this morning. And Courtney in Canberra, on your comments earlier, morning team, I totally agree with Stewie. It's weird how George Bailey's in the dressing sheds, in the tracksuit. He was in the photo when they won the T20 World Cup. It's weird and doesn't help the team, says Courtney in Canberra. So Stewie's saying maybe keep your distance, yeah?
Look, they've obviously gone with that as a setup, and for whatever reason, they've chosen to do that. And he was also there, I think, when Justin Langer was around. So it's not an Andrew McDonald thing. It's... He's been in there for a while.
Is there a selection panel, or is it just George?
Well, I think there's the coach, George, Tony Dottomade, and I dare say the captain probably gets a say, although maybe not in a vote or something like that. But, yeah, there used to be four selectors back in the day. When I was playing, it was Booney, Merv. It might have been Andrew Hilditch was the chairman, and I can't remember. Maybe Jamie Cox there for a little while, or the coach maybe, or something like that. Then they changed it. Remember, Pup was actually a selector at one stage, I think. Yeah. And then they changed that.
Ask him about it. He loved it.
Yeah, I'm sure it was the highlight of his day. Oh. Mate, it's actually a pain in the neck because having done a little bit of it at New South Wales, you just get drawn into conversations and... Yeah, everything. And you got your form and someone else's form, and you're comparing. And then you got to turn up to training. And then there's blokes on the team that you're basically about to drop, and you're standing next to them, talking to them, and going, oh, yeah, geez, you're going well, mate. And you're thinking, oh, no, I'm about to rub him out. Yeah. It's really hard to do.
Yeah, it'd be hard, I reckon, as a captain.
Mate, really hard.
Yeah. Well, Pup hated it because he said, I didn't have a powerful enough vote to... You know, influence the selection. Yet I was the one who had to go and tell the bloke that he was out of the team.
Ricky was very big on that too. That you, when you're in charge, you know, you're the wins and losses go against your name. The W's and the L's next to your name. Whereas in footy and other times, like in rugby league, well, the coach cops at the neck if you lose all the time before the players. Cricket, the captain gets it more than anyone else.
Heroes and Villains, 13:53:53, and. Just seeing some news in regards to the Olympics as well. Cycling legend Anna Mears, she's been named Australia's chef de mission, so our team leader for the 2024 Games in Paris.
Chef de mission.
Yes. Very well. Thank you for
the
French twang there, Stewie. But she completed four Olympics, won six medals, flag bearer at Rio 2016. Be a big job that, though, wouldn't it? Well, imagine doing it for the Tokyo Games last year.
So if chef de mission, is that like the manager, team manager?
Essentially, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. It's like
you know, we say you've got a manager when you go away on a footy tour and they're in charge.
Yeah, I think so. I think, that's probably the best way to describe it, I think. But I think they're like the go-to. If there's a problem, you go and see them. If you're not happy, you go and see them. If your room's not big enough, you go and see them.
Because the old days, the manager would just be in the bar. You'd know where he was.
I remember my first cricket trip. We went to Adelaide and the manager, we went to his room. He had like a... It was like a three-bedroom suite. Yeah. You walk in there and go, you know, we're all living, I mean, your roommates back early on, your roommates sleeping about a metre and a half. You go into the manager's room, and then he'd have all the drinks set out, so the boys would sit around, everyone get a beer out. This is the day before the game.
They'd have the desk. I remember Bullfrog Moore was the first manager that I ever sort of come across. Same thing. He had the big room, massive room, the Bullfrog.
Mate, couldn't find him after he wandered around. All the boys had gained and everyone would have a couple of beers. Then they'd go down the stairs to the bar for a couple more beers. Yeah. And then you'd go to dinner and have a couple of glasses of wine and turn up in Queensland, get bowled out for 50 and wonder what went wrong.
Now, Stu, just remind us what you're up to at the moment. So you're in the baseball game at the moment.
Softball. Right? I'm softball, the CEO of Softball New South Wales. So okay. I'll be heading out to Blacktown once I leave you good fellows here to ply my trade. And the world of softball, mate, it's an interesting one. Look, interesting coming from rugby league, cricket and places like that where there's lots of TV money to a huge participation sport, 80% females, around about just under the 10,000 mark, and very, very passionate people that love the game and are very committed to the game. So it's good fun.
Does it grow year on year, softball?
Well, it's hard to tell them because of COVID. It didn't last year, but it has this year. It's up probably 6 or 7% from where it was last year.
And what about, I read over the and heard over the weekend that because of the cost of living, people are now pulling their children out of sport because they haven't got the money to go and enrol them to play in sport.
It's a massive challenge to find that nice balance between running the sport and making the sport financially viable and not going broke. We're finding challenges because costs are going up and they're going up exponentially. And last year, softball, ran at a loss. So, unfortunately, there's not much you can do about that because, if you think about that, it's not like, and this is where it's a little bit hard because the big sports on TV, rugby league, cricket, AFL, even soccer to some extent, TV deal funds everything that goes on around it. The smaller sports.
Do council help out? Do they like provide ovals free of charge?
No. So we pay maintenance on ovals and light. So lighting's a big one. That's where a massive cost. So to turn the lights on any of your facilities now is so expensive because of the cost of power. And you can't tell teams, amateur players that, you can only train during the day because they're all going to work. So they train at night. So you have to turn the lights on for them, but that cost has to come from somewhere. And that's the thing people don't see is that we want to provide it, but the sports want to. And that's where I think the government needs to be. The TV and the professional sports are making so much money now. You look at their profit and loss statements through the year, they're all turning surpluses. You go and look at all the amateur sports, they're all turning losses. Mm. So how do you get that nice balance? I don't know. I don't want to take away money from the professional sports having worked in it, but a lot of the smaller sports, the Olympic sports, a good example. Look at netball.
What do you rely on, though?
It's participation funded. It's bottom-up funded.
Yeah, right.
So, every time a person plays, there's a little bit of government grants and a little bit of corporate money, but only a little bit. We run a little canteen, a little tuck shop there that makes a little bit of money, but we're participation funded. So the more players we get, the more financially viable we are.
Ecuador 2, Qatar 0 in the World Cup opener this morning. Yesterday in the Sydney Super Cup, more than 41,000 at a core stadium saw Everton beat Celtic 4-2 in a penalty shootout after the match finished scoreless after 90 minutes. No extra time played in that, exhibition match. So they went straight to a shootout, which Everton won. And there's a game, I believe it's tomorrow, between Everton and the Western Sydney Wanderers to finish the Sydney Super Cup. Been great to have those sides, though, here in Sydney. Now, also, there was a test match in rugby overnight. France are unbeaten in 13 tests. They beat Japan in Toulouse, 35-17. And, of course, the Wallabies over the weekend were beaten 13-10 by Ireland, the number one ranked team in the world at the moment. Again, discipline, in fact, on the heroes and villains on the text line. John from Orange says, Morty Boy's hero is Cole. That's Cole Hodges, putting in the effort to get out of the floods to call the races and everyone helping to clean up as well. And we did speak earlier this morning, by the way, to Andrew Barnes, who, grew up in Yugara, living in Orange at the moment, but he's a club legend there at the Yugara Golden Eagles. And he told us a bit all about the devastation and what we can do to help there as well. So just go back and listen to our podcast, Big Sports Breakfast, wherever you get your podcast to catch up on all the interviews and all throughout the show as well. John from Orange on the text line says, villain is the Wallabies, just getting so hard to watch them as we do so much the basics wrong, like securing our own ball and giving away silly penalties, says John from Orange. But 13-10, and we've got an enormous amount of injuries as well. Saw that they're coming home, a lot of those players, so they won't be able to play Wales next week. For the final match on the tour.
We'll be beating Wales. They got beaten by Georgia on the weekend.
Are you confident?
Yeah.
Are you mate, honestly confident?
Yeah. Because he won't be resting players.
No, but we're running out of players. Five are coming home.
We've got to find 15.
So all those players are coming home. Nick White, I think I read, is coming home as well. But those five players that basically got injured out of the game, Taliona Tupou's probably done his Achilles, so that's a significant injury. Andrew Kellaway, who, you know, he's been really good for us, one of our best players this year, toe injury. Hunter Paisami, Rob Valentini, Dave Parecki, they're all coming home after that loss to Wales on the weekend. But losing to Georgia, that's not good. 13-12.
No.
Wales, they're going through their
Georgia
own
can
issues.
Play on their day, though.
Yeah, that's a worse loss than us losing to Italy.
Yes. Yeah, that's bad. Yeah. And the other significant result, I guess, in the rugby test over the weekend was the England and the All Blacks drawing 25-all. And New Zealand then led that match 25-6 with 10 minutes left. And in the end, England rallied and snuck out a draw in that one. But we're going to talk some racing. We saw Riadini win the gong, the million-dollar gong there at Kembla Grange on Saturday, beating Hope in Your Heart. And Old Flame filled the placings. Brutality for the multi, for Loz's multi, ran fifth. We needed it to run a place, but we'll be back next week. Lozza and Ali Mosley's back right now. Morning, Ali.
Good morning, Mido. How are you going?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. So what'd you make of the performance from Riadini for Gay Waterhouse, Adrian Bott and Tim Clark on Saturday?
Oh, it was fantastic. It was a well overdue win, most certainly. He hadn't been in the winner's stall for quite some time, and I know the team were pretty confident that he was low-level flying, and a few of, I think, the Sky Experts were with him as well. So I thought it was a super win. I was though, rooting for Hope in Your Heart. I think it would have been such a fantastic story for Kerry Parker, and I backed her, so but more so for Kerry. I thought she was just going to get there in time, but just didn't see quite enough in the straight to be able to make it in time. But I thought a super run from her and a couple that I think I'll follow out of that race as well.
What did you make of a thrill, Rick, in the Warra?
Yeah, fantastic. I actually thought American President was the runner of that race. I was really impressed with how he's come back.
You tipped him too, didn't you? Did you tip him or give him a strong push on Friday?
I think I tipped him. Well, my best bet was Quick Tempo, who got up, so that was nice for us. And Unanimous in Victoria, who I backed each way. I hope the punters backed him each way as well. It was a sticky watch. I was cheering him home from Kembla, but it was a relatively good weekend, I thought. But American President is the one that I'll follow out of that. I think he's come back in great order. It was tricky. We ended up having that upgrade to the Good Free, and the track was really fast. And so a few of the horses that were probably resuming or a bit older, found it just a little bit too firm for them. The likes of Purple Sector, I spoke to Reece afterwards, and he said he actually went super. It just was too hard for him. So it was one of those days where it threw up some different results, and the horses, particularly the older horses, I think would normally go well on a good track. It was probably just a bit too much of a hard deck for them.
Clarkie's on holidays and saw his filly, pretty wild run, a very game second there on Saturday, but got held up a little bit at the top of the straight and then looked the winner there for about 100 metres, but then Star Beretta came over the top.
Yeah, that was a great effort from her, though. And actually, when I saw her in the yard, I thought I'd be waiting a run for her. She looked like she was probably carrying a touch more condition than what I've seen her with in previous prep. So I think the run would have done her the world of good. So if you liked her off that run in terms of her physical in the yard, I thought, oh, I reckon had I been able to see her, I would have waited another run for her, because she just looked like perhaps she would have been much better for the run. She looked beautiful. She was shining in the coat, but I just thought maybe she was carrying a bit of extra condition and we'll just improve off that.
Now, what about Colin Webster? 82-year-old Colin Webster, his first Group 1 in the railway. He was my hero. He's one of our heroes this morning. We're playing heroes and villains.
Wow, it was incredible. And I read an article as well that some of his owners are in their 90s and they got out to the races as well. So the whole story is fantastic. And I guess it shows that racing can still throw up stories like that. You know, we see the young and up-and-coming trainers, the Clayton Douglases of the world winning Everest. And then we see, I think he might even be 83 or 84. I should check that officially. But I've seen some varied ideas of what his age is. But just amazing. And for someone who has put so much of his life into racing to get a return and and of that nature. I think it's fantastic. And how good was Brit post-race interview? I don't know if you guys were watching, but they just did such a fantastic job, that broadcast team over there, to bring the story to life. And he got emotional, and I'm sure the owners would have, and he did say that not often that his 90-year-old owners can get out to the races, but they were there to watch him, and I thought it was fantastic. They're the stories that we live for in racing.
Tell you what, it'd be an even bigger story if they've been with him since day dot.
Yeah.
They've stuck solid.
That's a bloody long time.
So what are you following then? What caught your eye out of Saturday then, Ali?
So the first horse I'll follow is Dragonstone. He went the best last 600 of the day. I think he's going really well, so we'll throw Dragonstone in. And then actually out of the gong, one I didn't mind was Burdebeck. And again, on his physical, I thought he still had his coat to come through, and it's often a little hard to tell with greys, but you could see that his coat was really sticking out. So I thought, in terms of his physical, there's more to come from him. He was just probably one out of the box. He ran into quarters late, closing off, was on the unsuited inner part of the track and still went the fifth best last 600 in the gong. So I just thought, you know, if you're sort of looking outside the obvious ones, Burdebeck could be one to throw in. And then just off the eye, I thought Key Largo ran a super race as well for Hazy. He ran the third best 600 of the race, and he was in the worst part of the ground as well. They were all coming off that rail. So just a couple maybe sneakier ones to follow out of the weekend.
It's the Hong Kong International Meetings this week, isn't it?
Well, we had yesterday, last night, so James rode a double.
Okay, I'm out of the loop. Last night.
I was going to say, what have you been doing all weekend?
Other things.
Clearly. James rode a double. Huey rode the last winner on the program. And I think Zach Burton might have ridden four winners. So it was all about the Aussies last night.
Outstanding. And Damien Lane did have a victory in Japan, didn't he?
Yeah. So we've been winning all over the world. And then there's the whole week of the International Jockey. I think, is it called the International Jockeys Week? Or I get confused about the name, but that's coming up too. So
we'll that's what I was alluding to. Yes, it's the big international meeting. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. No, that's still a little while away. Okay. Yeah, I think it's end of the first week of December.
December 11 at Shark Tin. I've just seen it there.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
All right, great stuff, Ali. Thank you as always. Have a great week, and we'll get your mail on Friday.
Thanks, guys.
Ali Mosley there. Just back on the World Cup, I see that Qatar put a last-minute ban on selling alcohol at tournament venues as well. And Budweiser, they've got a stack of beer just sitting over there that they now can't sell, and they put out a tweet saying, winning country gets the buds. So that's a little incentive. How would they... the logistics of organising all that, seriously.
So what you're saying is they told Budweiser you can be the official sponsor of alcohol in the beers within the event. And then at the last minute said, oh yeah, but we're not allowed to sell it. Yeah, Budweiser would be over the moon with that. That would be a good commercial decision for them, wouldn't it?
Well, you'd be going back going, can we have about, I don't know, £30 million back?
Whatever it cost us to buy the rights to this, can we get that back?
Yeah.
Well, they wouldn't be pulling out, would they? Because isn't the next World Cup in America?
Yes. America, I think Mexico and Canada, I think they're sharing it.
There'll be a lot of Budweiser sold there. Not a big fan of the Bud, to be honest.
Well, we've just had a text through. Heroes, Qatar and FIFA for banning Budweiser sales. Absolute disgusting beer.
I didn't read it. Good on you. I agree. I'm not a...
The only time I really drink Bud is on
Super Bowl day.
Do you tailgate around too? Do you drive around like they do? Yeah, the tailgate parties?
No, well, if you go to a Super Bowl...
Oh, you go to a party, okay.
Drinking Bud.
Yeah, right. No, fair enough.
So you just got to drink what the locals are drinking.
Well, you got to get in the atmosphere, don't you?
Exactly right.
It's like eggnog at Christmas. You'd be a big eggnog, maybe?
Never had it.
Oh, neither have I. I've tasted it.
Eggnog.
Horrible stuff.
What is it? It's an American thing.
Yeah.
Well, do we know what? I'm going to Google what's in eggnog.
This show takes some weird turns.
Oh, it's like when you're in the UK, like the black pudding.
Oh, yeah.
Seriously?
It's horrible stuff.
No, thank you.
Oh, you're in Scotland. People say you have haggis. Come on.
Just also on the text line here, hero Paul Gallant to be a professional athlete for as long as he has in two of the toughest sports in the world and helping revive Australian boxing. Love him or hate him. You have to admire his dedication and professionalism. Villain, Justin Hodges, full-blown grub. Hashtag Queenslander. Knock him out, Gal. Jeez, boys, love the show. Big Albert. And that is Thursday. Gal's last fight. Well, we know that boxers do retire about 17 times, but Gal, this is it apparently, $1.28 with Tab. Hodges, $3.50 for their rematch.
It is, when you think about it, 20 years, you know, the last five doing what he's, you know, boxing. What's he, 42, I think, Gal, or 41 or something like that?
So, he'd be in his 40s.
So man, massive effort to keep all the training that you got to do to keep going and keep going and keep going. Mate, hard work.
41 is Gal.
Mentally strong too, you know, to continually push yourself. And two hard sports, boxing and rugby league.
Walk in and get punched in the head.
Yeah.
It can't be any good.
No. And Gal played long minutes when he played rugby league too. You know, he hated coming off the field. And if you replaced him, he always, you know, was filthy with you. But he was able to play long minutes. So it's not like he played over 200 games and 40 minutes a game.
And he didn't play on the wing either.
He was doing the tough stuff and carried the ball up strongly and made plenty of yards. And
that's when you look at Cameron Smith and you go, how did he play for so long?
Oh, remarkable. Remarkable, his career. There probably will be at some stage.
Yeah.
But I don't think in the foreseeable future you'll see someone play as many games as Cameron Smith has.
He hardly got injured. He missed like 12 games throughout the course of his whole career.
Incredible.
Unbelievable.
And for a guy that, you know, Joey would always say, you look at him, he looks like an accountant.
He'd be 95 kilos, mate, just play in the middle of the field, week in, week out.
But not only play over 400 NRL games, he played, I think, if not over 100 representative games, close to 100 representative games with Origins and Test matches. So there's 500 games.
Yeah.
So you could say it's 500 games that he's participated in and would have played 80 minutes in most of them.
Yeah.
And I just can't believe someone in today's era can play that amount of football. I just find it remarkable.
I find it astounding.
Yeah. So he's played 56 games for Australia and 42 for Queensland. So that's another...
Nearly 100.
Another, 98. On top of his 433. So he's played over 500.
500 is nowhere near enough. So I still remember, I think you might have been the coach, bring back some bad memories, but one of those Origins up in, it might have been 2016, or he said, I haven't run enough in game three, I'm going to run more. Mm. And the game was over by half time. He decided to run. And he just, no matter who was on the other side of the field, he just destroyed teams.
Oh, wonderful player. Like, just so smart.
Yeah.
Conniving too, he was.
You'd rather have him on your team than against them, wouldn't you?
You're a soldier. Thanks for coming in today.
That's right. Student. Are we finished already?
No, we're going to go to David. I wanted to give you the proper farewell. You know?
We're just going to extend it for a bit.
No,
we're going to go after 9, actually. Haven't they told you? We're going to go to 9:30.
And you're going straight into work.
I'm going straight. The world of softball.
Inspiration.
The world of softball needs me. I have to give my soul. I've given my soul this morning, and I'll be giving my guts for softball a bit later on.
No, it's good.
Till at least 2 o'clock this afternoon.
Is anyone from the office listening? Oh, well, we better give it. Before we check in with Dave, let's give a winner out for heroes and villains. And I'm going to give it to... And I'm giving it because I need a scapegoat, because I followed our listener in the other day and caller who declared Alaskan God to us. And so the villain... this is a text this morning. It's from Winners Win at Canberra. Who said, villain, the very confident punter who tipped Alaskan God in the railway hasn't finished yet, and his hero has to be Samoa, playing 3 grand finals in a row with limited depth in the end, and a special mention to James Tedesco, hands down the best player in the world, said, winners win Canberra, but you win this morning. Winners do win, so well done. In fact, we're going to be speaking to Ron Duffy to preview punters post-mortem shortly, ahead of, what have we got this week? I think it's the festival stakes there at Rosehill Gardens, back at Rosehill for a meeting on Saturday. Feels like a while. So yeah, the festival stakes, the Starlight this weekend, and after the $1 million gong there on Saturday. So wrapping all that up on Punters Postmortem this morning. In fact, we got Duff there now. Good morning, Duff.
Yeah, good morning, guys.
What did you make of the performance of Rhea Deeney in the gong there, beating Hope in Your Heart and the favourite Old Flame on Saturday?
Yeah, all the favourites figured in the finish, even though it was a wide betting race. It was a great setup, really. by the Waterhouse Bot Camp. He hadn't won in 3 years. They ran him in a couple of sort of weight for age sprints and got him ready for the mile with no weight on his back, and they got the perfect result in a high prize money race. So he sets up very well for the Ingham now in a couple of weeks' time. 3 weeks' time, I think it might be, and or 2 weeks' time, and he looks like he's hit form at the right time. She was very brave. Again, Hope in Your Heart. Old Flame was good, and Brutality had a lot to do while they're running course record time up front. So you can tick them all off as good runs, but just a terrific setup by the stable with Riadini, I thought.
Duff, you mentioned being over 1,000 days, and look, there's plenty of reasons why horses don't win. But as a general rule, when you see a horse that, you know, hasn't won for that long, how confident are you about it getting the job done finally?
Yeah, look, there's always some reasons, and like maybe because he's been thrown in the deep end, big races all the way through his career, he's had little issues along the way. Sometimes horses might have injuries with tendons, and they're off for a year, so that distorts that. So yeah, there's different reasoning. I think he's genuine. It's not that he's just that he's running into some really good races and he's found wet tracks, and he's more of a dry tracker. So that there's little things there that you can say, well, we can be forgiving.
Yeah.
Every horse has got its race.
Got to ask you how our co-panelist who's off today, but Clarkie's horse Pretty Wild. What'd you make of her run there in the fifth on Saturday?
I thought I made her the horse to follow from the day, actually. I forgot about Clarkie's in that, and then I thought she was terrific. I reckon she needed the run. She went into that race first up, won soft trial, first time dry track, and she had to tick a lot of boxes off for me, and she ticked them all off. So I think she can improve. She's adaptable, and she can train on, and at this time of year, yeah, she's going to sneak right through those classes.
Racing throws up so many wonderful stories, Duff, but what about Colin Webster over there in the West? I mean, 82 years of age, his first Group 1 training, tricks of the trade in the railway to win.
A lovely man and a lovely story as well. And would you believe he trained the two-year-old winner of the first as well? So he's got plenty to look forward to. there's a little bit of an argument going, or debate going around, that he may have trained another Group 1 winner. And it was the 1980 Oaks winner over there. So I think it's not a Group 1 anymore, the Oaks, but back then, I think if you go through the stud book and the Arian pedigrees, that it was a Group 1. I think the Miller's Guide had it a Group 2, but the official sites had it a Group 1. So Colin might know. He might be straight to Group 1 winners.
He's forgotten. We said earlier this morning, Duff, like, you know, owners, when they stick solid and some leave, the owners were in their 90s, so we're hoping that they've stuck solid with him all the way through.
Well, that's another story.
Well, you mentioned Pretty Wild, Duff. What else are you following out of the meeting on Saturday?
I thought the horse out of the Highway, Atmospheric Rock. It's hard to go from those Class 1s in the country to a highway, so I thought he overachieved. And I like the way Rainbow Connection's gone in his two runs back from a spell. So he's back to the horse he was in his first preparation.
Thanks so much, mate. We'll catch you for Punters Postmortem.
See you, guys.
And it is coming up next with the team. But that is us done and dusted for the Monday, Stewie.
Thanks,
enjoy
boys.
Your day, mate.
Thank you. Thanks for all your help this morning. It's been good fun. And I haven't been here for 12 months. And it might be 12 months till I come back.
Lover.
Good on you, Stew.
Have a great day, mate.
Good on you, Mitter.
See you, everyone.